Welcome to Thursday's edition of Fantasy Baseball Today. Adam Azer with Al Melchior and back for more, Chris Towers. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, I'm not scared of you. I'll be here. I'll be here all season.
He's a glutton for punishment.
Yeah, well, he did great, didn't he, Al?
Yeah, awesome.
I guess you guys are going to be kind of a Tuesday-Thursday team, which I like.
Great. Let's not set the bar too high.
Oh, I thought you were like, great, let's not make me and Al a team.
No, I like Al. Al's a good guy.
To his face you say that, Chris. We all know the truth. All right, it's Thursday, April 9th. Welcome to
the
show.
I didn't until now. Anyway.
Come on, Al. You knew it without knowing it. Send us your emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Everybody wants their trades graded right now. We'll see if we can sneak in a couple grade the trades. I'm not sure if we will. Maybe tomorrow.
Too early to be making trades, guys.
Yeah, I disagree.
Okay.
We had this discussion yesterday, but I disagree. I think people can get suckered into trades because people overreact, Al, don't they?
Oh, do they ever.
And that bothers you, Al.
Well, it doesn't bother if you make a trade that works to your benefit, I bet.
No, but it bothers you when people overreact, right?
Oh, yeah, it does.
So give me like an overreaction right now that you think people might be having that they shouldn't be having.
Well, I actually think people are reacting a little bit to Matt Latos, as awful as he was and as concerned as I was about him. And I have no problem with people dropping him in a 12-team mixed league, but people are even looking to drop him in deeper leagues, and that's an overreaction.
If Shelby Miller were available, would you drop Latos for Shelby Miller, Al?
No, I wouldn't do that.
Really?
Yeah.
I think I would. I think you've got similar-ish upside. You know, what? Go back 2 years ago, Shelby Miller wasn't that much worse.
No, 2 years ago, he was very good.
And so, you know, if they were both bad last year, you have injury concerns about Matt Latos. You have the fact that his velocity didn't look great yesterday, or 2 days ago. He couldn't spot anything. I think I'd take Shelby Miller.
Well, the thing is, Latos, I don't think, was bad last year. I think Shelby Miller for much of the year was genuinely bad.
Sure.
I have more doubts about him. I agree. They have similar upside. And with Latos, that's a tough thing because you're right. He wasn't really spotting his pitch as well. There was a scout that was making that observation. He's got the reputation for not being the most cerebral pitcher.
Okay.
Latos. So it's a fixable thing, but maybe not, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I just, you know, he was pretty good for about, 100 innings when he was healthy? He had like a 3 ERA for 100 innings. Shelby Miller's like last 10 starts, he had an ERA right around 3. So you're looking at fairly close sample sizes of success, and the only difference is Miller had the larger sample size of not being good, but Latos had the sample size of not being able to pitch at all. So I think I'd take Miller over him.
We'll get to Miller a little bit later. It was kind of interesting because you mentioned those last 10 starts, Chris, and Miller's last 10 starts last year, and I brought this up before. It was after Justin Masterson came over in a trade, and Masterson helped him with a sinker. And he was good, 2-1 with a 2.93 ERA, but 18 walks to 46 strikeouts and 7 homers allowed in 61 and a third. And those aren't great. And last night, Miller pitched well. He didn't allow a run, but he walked 2 in 5 innings. Small sample size, but you want to see him control the walks. More on him later. We got a lot to get to, including Adrian Gonzalez, who has set a baseball record. Yankees bullpen, what's going on there? We will break down that situation. Some great starting pitching yesterday. Actually, a very, very good day overall for pitchers. Changes in lineups. Hisashi Iwakuma had a rough first inning. Anthony Ghost had a big game. And Al and Chris, the Marlins are terrible.
They had a terrible series.
Burn the stadium down.
Oh, there's an overreaction.
Burn the stadium down with the roof open or the roof closed?
Let it breathe.
Let it breathe. Adrian Gonzalez, stat of the day, first player in baseball history to hit 5 home runs in the first 3 games of a season. That's from the Elias Sports Bureau. I want to pause and tell people this since I always forget to tell people important things. In the middle of my Adrian Gonzalez thought, sorry. Using different equipment today, hoping for better connection and better sound quality. So bear with us for maybe just a few podcasts as I work out the kinks. Shouldn't be too different, but using something new, let's see what happens. Anyway, Adrian Gonzalez, he's got 5 home runs. He hit 27 home runs last year. He was a top 6 first baseman, going to be 33 years old in May. What do you make of this hot start for Gonzalez, who hit 8 homers in April last year?
You know, I don't think it means a big difference in his value is compared to last year. In other words, I'm not saying, look at this great start. He's going to hit 40, 45 home runs. But I do think that it's some, I don't know, you can't really validate anything in three games, but it feels like it's some validation for the fact that last year is repeatable. And I think there were doubters going into this year.
I mean, he's, what, 34?
He'll be 33.
32, I think, right?
He'll be 33 in May. Okay.
So he's up there. You know, he's certainly not in his prime. He's starting to slump a little more against lefties the last couple of seasons. You can't take anything away. There were some questions about the strength of the Padres' rotation away from Petco, I think. So, you know, it's not the strongest run of starting pitchers of all time he's going up against.
It's pretty good. I mean,
Kashner didn't look great last night.
Tyson Ross. I don't remember who he homered against in the first two games. Did he homer off the starters? That'd be Shields and Ross.
Yeah, I don't remember if he homered off of Ross or.
I think he homered off Joaquin Benoit, didn't he?
I honestly don't remember.
Well, it doesn't matter. Finish your thought.
I think it is. You know, whether it was the starters or not. I mean, this is why you can't really validate anything with three games, because you know, if it wasn't Gonzalez, whoever did produce against Ross and against Cashner, I mean, this is not what I expect from them rest of season.
Last question, then let's wrap it up with this. How would you have ranked them preseason? How would you have ranked them now? Freeman, Gonzalez, Victor Martinez.
Format matters for me here, because I like Freeman better than Gonzalez in points, but in Roto the other way around, and V-Mart better than both of them.
Chris?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely hasn't changed, right?
It hasn't changed.
You know, the question about Freeman is the Braves' offense surrounding him and whether he's going to be able to drive in enough and score enough runs. I don't think you have that question about Gonzalez. So I think I'd go Gonzalez over Freeman.
We've got Heath Cummings coming on later in the show. I don't think we're going to do it at a half hour. We'll push it back a bit, maybe to about the 40-minute mark, to talk daily, as we're still kind of figuring out the best way to do that. But we will have daily content for you, daily fantasy sports content for you, and help you set your lineups. Big news! Joe Nathan on the DL with a flexor strain in his elbow. Joaquin Soria will close. Do you think he has a chance to make it permanent?
I think he does, even though Brad Osmus says he doesn't.
Right.
But no, I think, you know, let's see. First of all, how long Nathan is out. This doesn't sound like an injury he necessarily will return back from quickly.
Yeah, I mean, Osmus did say he hopes to get him back in a couple weeks, but, you know, who knows what that actually means.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping for, you know, a major infusion of cash in the next week or two, you know, just to fall from the sky, but...
Yeah, I mean,
that might not happen.
Soria was already 51% owned. He was worth owning even before Nathan's injury, just because it seemed inevitable that Nathan was going to falter at some point. He was so bad last season. He was so bad in the spring. There was really not much in terms of signs of hope. So even if Nathan does come back, you're not necessarily dropping Soria, right?
Oh, no.
So must add right now?
You know, I got this question on Twitter, and my response was sort of a qualified one.
Like, can add?
Can add for sure. And I think if you need saves, if you have, you know, one of the injured closers or somehow you wound you're not comfortable with Betances, whatever, you need reliable saves, then yes, he's a must add in that situation.
You wouldn't drop Betances for him, would you?
No, I would not.
So closers...
Eight walks to five strikeouts going back to the start of the spring, though. His control's all over the place right
Betances?
Now. Betances, yeah.
All right, we might as well just dive into that situation. So Betances pitched the eighth inning in a they were losing at the time by two runs, and he gave or by one run maybe.
Yeah.
And he gave up an unearned run, but he looked bad. He walked two. He gave up one hit and an unearned run. Did not strike anybody out against Toronto. And then Andrew Miller came in and got the save after the Yankees scored three in the bottom of the eighth. Three just ridiculous runs. The Blue Jays should be embarrassed the way they coughed that game up. It was all Blue Jays there. So, okay. Betances came in with all righties due up and the heart of the order due up. It was Russell Martin, Bautista, Encarnacion, Donaldson. Miller came in after that. There was one lefty due up. He was pinch hit for. Reyes ended up hitting. He's a switch hitter. So it's certainly not a situation, if you just saw the box score, where Miller is the closer, but he looked much better than Betances, who's still trying to figure some stuff out right now. So what's your take on the Yankees situation, guys?
Well, it really hasn't changed for me because I still think Betances could be the primary closer or maybe even the sole closer at some point. But he's, yeah, like you said, he's figuring stuff out. And
it's an okay place to be when you're figuring stuff out if your team doesn't have another relief ace, I think is the way to put it, is that, you know, if the best other reliever was a league average guy, then it's fine. He can work things out in the ninth inning. But when it's Andrew Miller, who they gave a pretty decent amount of money to, he might not have a huge margin for error there in terms of figuring things out. Like, Miller might get, you know, if it takes Betances 2 weeks to figure things out, Miller might establish himself as the closer in that time, right?
He could. And this is just complete speculation and hunches, but I Betances has already given them reasons, to go to Miller, and Girardi has hedged all the way.
Yeah.
So I think they want, and this is not just really hunched, because there have been some reports that say the organization wants Betances to close.
Yeah.
So I just perceive that his leash isn't really that short.
It's also possible that they split saves based on who's due up.
Oh, that's fun.
Which would be terrible. So our tweet of the day comes from Eric Burns. Would you rather have Andrew Miller or Joaquin Soria?
And I would rather have Soria. I don't want to really mess with that Yankee situation if I don't already have one or both of those guys.
Yeah, but man, I wouldn't feel great about dropping Miller.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, okay, well, that's the situation. I mean, if it's a question of who to pick up,
yeah.
I'll take Soria. But if I already have Miller, is that a swap I'm making? No, I would like to add Soria. There's always somebody better to drop.
My gut tells me Soria ends the season with more saves than Miller.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably fair. But I think Miller's got the chance to get, 25, 30 saves, even if he doesn't get the role forever. And I think he's going to be pretty good either way. You know, he's one of those guys that even if he's not getting saves, he's a fringy roto league guy anyway.
Nah, I don't buy that. Well, obviously, if there's holds, then yes. But I'm sorry, in a standard like 5x5 mixed league, unless it's super deep, I just don't buy that middle relievers who don't get saves are really worth much.
Well, no, I'm not saying if he gets no saves, maybe. But if you're looking at someone who over the course of a full season can get 20, 25 saves.
Oh, sure. Yeah, then that'd be good. All right, moving on here. Michael Brantley was scratched with back tightness. Doesn't seem serious. Brandon Belt did not play yesterday. He's optimistic he'll avoid the DL. Jairys Familia should get the bulk of the save opportunities while Mejia is out, but maybe not if they're facing a bunch of lefties in the ninth inning. Lefties hit .293 against Familia last year, and righties hit .134. And Alex Gordon will likely sit today to rest his wrist, and Garrett Richards could start next week. We have more news and notes to get to later in the show. Right now, let's talk about Wednesday standouts. Who stood out to you guys yesterday?
Ah, oh, boy. I mean, there's just so many. I'll go negative here. Hisashi Iwakuma, not an encouraging first start, and that's on the heels of a bad finish last year.
That's right. Iwakuma had a 7.88 ERA in his last seven starts after basically like 2 years of awesome pitching. So, yeah, what do you make of it now? Now, look, most of it was in the first inning, four runs in the first, one in the second, and then he settled in.
Well, and this is a function of what we've talked about so much this spring, which is that the middle ranks of starting pitchers have seemed to improve, and there's so many high upside guys that it's not so much a vote of no confidence on Iwakuma, but that I probably would sit him at least for a week because I think there are plenty of options out there that feel safer at this point.
Chris, a standout for you?
I'm going to go – we're feeling pretty negative here in the Fort Lauderdale office, so
good.
I'm going to go LaTroy Hawkins. I on CBSSports.com, I have a closers column going up every Thursday, so there's a shameless plug. LaTroy Hawkins is a very shaky closer. We all know that. Gave up four hits and two runs in blowing the save yesterday, his first blown save of the season. The Rockies did end up coming back and winning, but not a great sign for LaTroy Hawkins if you're one of the maybe 45% of leagues where somebody owns LaTroy Hawkins.
I would like to add one thing on Hawkins because I did watch that ninth inning, and it was a very unlucky ninth inning. It was four singles that he gave up. The one to Braun, a pinch hit, two-out single, it was a really poorly hit ball that just was perfect placement. None of them. One of them was hit kind of hard. So I don't. I think there's reason to going into the season to doubt LaTroy Hawkins, Chris. But I just wanted to point out this was a bit of an unlucky outing for him.
I mean, sure, but when you're striking out 32 batters in 54 innings,
it's going to happen.
Luck, yeah. I mean, that you're going to have those nights where you keep the ball in the zone too much. Guys are going to put the ball in play, and sometimes you get unlucky. That's the downside to having a closer who's not lights out, and there's very little margin for error with him.
Okay, well, you guys are in a great mood. I'll spice things up a bit. Jake Odorizzi had a start last night that, if you want to be an overreactor, it makes you say, wow, this guy could take the next step. And then after the game, he said, I learned a lot last year. It was a learning experience. I applied what I learned. Odorizzi went out and had a 6 2/3 inning outing with two hits, no runs, no walks, 7 strikeouts against the Orioles. It is important to note that last year he was awesome at home, and this was a home start. He had a 2.62 home ERA, and Odorizzi had a 6.32 road ERA. He also had a pretty good opening day start, or, you know, debut start last year. 6 scoreless against the Rangers, and then he was terrible in his next 5. Anyway, what do you think of Odorizzi?
I want to see him do this on the road.
Right.
Yeah, that's the thing, because he was very good at home last year, and given the type of pitcher that he is, that makes a lot of sense, because he does miss a lot of bats, but when he's not missing them, it's a lot of fly balls, and he can get away with that at Tropicana Field.
He's a 2-star pitcher next week at Toronto. That's Tuesday, and then home against the Yankees on a Sunday. I'll also point out Anibal Sanchez had a very good start, guys. Who are you more encouraged by, Odorizzi or Anibal Sanchez, or neither? It's too early in the season to be encouraged.
I mean, the default answer is obviously going to be the latter. But Odorizzi probably has a little more room to project some growth into him if he can keep this up.
Well, and I would say Sanchez if I'm not going to go with the default answer, because a down season last year after a career year in 2013. So I am looking for signs that he can achieve the upside that he showed 2 years ago.
Who do you guys like better if you were going to gamble on someone? Aaron Harang, who did very well against Boston and got off to a nice start last year, or Chris Heston, who gave up 2 unearned runs in 6 innings on 3 hits at Arizona? Chris Heston or Aaron Harang?
I'm not really a fan of Harang, and I'm going Harang here.
Wow.
give me the guy who could maybe not be Aaron Harang. You know, we don't know what Chris Heston can be, but we know Aaron Harang's Aaron Harang. And, you know, last season aside, I think that, you know, 1.4 whip shows you that the 3.57 ERA, probably not a sustainable number. I'll at least gamble on some upside, regardless of how little the upside is.
Now, look, we're only pretty much 3 days into the season, discounting Sunday night with 1 game, that Cardinals-Cubs game. There hasn't really been, other than closers. Closers are like a separate fantasy league. They just, you know, it's crazy. Other than closers, just hasn't been a guy yet that I've been rushing to the waiver wire to get. I did add C.J. Wilson, but I dropped Matt Cain for him, so that was kind of a free roster spot. I do think I'm interested in Brandon McCarthy, even though he had a kind of a rough outing yesterday. But there hasn't been a guy yet that it was like, holy crap, I need to add him. So I was wondering if Heston could be that guy. I was wondering if Adam Lind could be that guy. And I'm wondering if you guys have any candidates for that guy right now. And keep in mind, we haven't really had any like back-end rotation pitchers pitch yet, so that's probably a part of why there hasn't been that obvious guy yet.
Yeah, for me, it's Jake Lamb. I've already picked him up in 3 leagues since opening day. And that probably looks really knee-jerk because, you know, he had a great first 2 games and, of course, you know, cooled off last night. But it's really just more a function of the fact that, okay, it looks like he's going to get regular playing time. And my feeling about Lamb was that if he was going to play close to every day, that he's standard mixed league viable.
But first of all, you're overreacting. No, just kidding. And second, second, don't you think he's going to sit against lefties? And is that going to hurt his value, at least in a head-to-head format? Maybe not necessarily a standard roto.
Yeah, no, that's a valid point in head-to-head. And you know, I do have him now in a couple of head-to-head leagues. And, yeah, I may not start him every week, but I certainly want him rostered for the weeks where he's going to face a lot of righties.
Okay. Chris, any candidates for you?
Actually, you know, looking at Heston a little deeper, looking at his he got 15 swinging strikes last night. He was throwing in the mid-90s with his fastball, averaging 93 with his fastball, 92 with his sinker. His stuff's pretty good, and his minor league numbers aren't terrible. I think, you know, in a deep league, he might be worth a shot if he can, you know, there's questions about whether he can have a rotation spot moving forward, right?
Yeah, well, he's staying in for now, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's I hadn't seen the breakdown from last night, and that is absolutely shocking to me that he'd get 15 whiffs because he was not a bat misser at all.
Yeah.
In the minor
leagues. Yeah, I mean, it could just be these guys have never seen him, but he got 9 swinging strikes on 34 pitches between his slider and curveball. That's really impressive.
Well, I saw the highlights, and his out pitch, whether it was the slider or the curveball, was very impressive.
But it's the first, you know, it's the first start. You'll see that a lot with kind of fringy minor league guys where they come out in their first start. Nobody's ever seen them before. There's not any scouting report, and then, you know, the league figures them out. So it's possible that that's just a one game sample size.
Bullpen news. K-Rod, 82% owned. He gave up a solo home run to lose the game to Willian Rosario yesterday, a pinch hit homer. And this is a guy who allowed 14 home runs last season, so Francisco Rodriguez is off to a bad start. Joel Peralta got the save for the Dodgers. I'm guessing Chris Hatcher was unavailable, but
he threw on the first two games of the season, so that probably makes sense.
Yeah, but he was awful 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Ken Giles, Chris and I talked about this on Twitter. He might be over-owned. He's 35% owned, and he was bad in the spring. He was terrible yesterday. He walked 3 2/3 of an inning. I know Chris thinks he's over-owned. I feel like he's over-owned. Do you think Ken Giles is over-owned now at 35%?
No, actually, that sounds just about right, because as far as closers in waiting go, and I guess we can, you know, at least for now, cross Soria off that list, he's the top guy.
You still think the reason why I think he's over-owned is his control issues, and two, Papelbon seems much less likely to get moved at this point than he did a month or two ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think he will get moved. It's just, you know, maybe closer to mid-season. But I just think Giles is a good stash because you don't want to throw away a potentially dominant closer. And I have to wonder, because he did have some back issues in the spring, and you know you're saying that correctly so that he hasn't really been himself, and you know that's not necessarily good news. But if it is something that's been bothering him and he overcomes it, you're going to want to have him.
I guess I just look at it. You see more trades at the end of spring training than you do in the April-May range.
Sure.
So if you were picking him, assuming that Papelbon was going to be traded, you were hoping it was going to happen by the end of the spring, that somebody was going to finally figure out that they didn't like their closer situation, that you were going to have to make that move to get him. Now that we're into the season, teams are going to try to see what they have, right?
No, I agree. I'm not expecting Giles to close in the next 2 months.
Like I'm trying to remember the last time we saw a big closer trade in the pre-July even.
Right, but we're talking 35% here. I think we were saying 55% is like there's way too many standard and shallow leagues.
Like I've got him in a 12-team head-to-head categories league. I should probably drop him in that format.
I think it's defensible. Okay. I don't think he's a must drop.
Okay,
it's defensible for the right guy.
Let's put this out there. Would you drop him right now for Joel Peralta or Chris Hatcher?
No way.
You think they'll split?
Yes.
Jason Grilly and Brad Boxberger looked good last night. Grilly's got 2 saves. Boxberger got his first. He struck out the side. And Brett Cecil gave up a run. He was very wild. Now, this is a guy with major control issues. Brett Cecil hit a batter. I think he hit a batter. Threw a wild pitch. He had a walk all in a third of an inning, and he gave up a hit. So is there a concern about Cecil, and is there somebody in the Toronto bullpen that you'd want to stash?
there is, and unfortunately, this is one of these players. You have certain players, you have trouble remembering the name. Who's the kid? I think he's 20 years old.
Oh, yeah. He pitched yesterday. Is it Castro?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a fireballer.
Yeah, so I apologize for the absent-mindedness, but that guy.
I don't think, Al, that they have a great candidate in their bullpen if Cecil does have trouble. Well, obviously, we're being way too premature here, but people like to speculate on these things. Is there a, yeah, right? Would you agree with that? There's not like a great obvious. There's not a Soria in the Blue Jays bullpen.
No. And I mean, nobody with a proven track record.
It's,
I mean,
Miguel Castro, by the way.
Yeah, Miguel Castro. That's, I mean, that's why there was kind of a question about who would be the closer going into spring training.
Right. Some fringy starting pitchers for you. When I say that, I mean not obvious to be owned in standard mixed leagues. These guys are owned in 75 to 80% of leagues. I want to know if you think they are fringy or if they are must-own. Shelby Miller, Willie Peralta, who only struck out one but pitched well against Colorado, and Brandon McCarthy gave up 2 home runs, 9 hits in 5 innings, but 9 strikeouts as well against San Diego. Miller, Peralta, McCarthy, who's your favorite, and are these guys must-owns?
Well, after I sort of badmouthed him, about 10 minutes ago, Miller is my favorite out of these three because of exactly what Chris was saying, that 2 seasons ago, he was very good and looked like he was on an upward swing. So I'll give him a shot to achieve that upside. I think Peralta and McCarthy, we know who they are, and they're good, but the upside is nowhere near as close.
They're replaceable, whereas yeah. Miller has a chance to not be. He has a chance to hit a higher upside. Only 4 strikeouts in 5 innings. Did get 10 ground ball outs, which is a pretty nice sign.
But McCarthy was really an ace for the Yankees last year. He was pitching a lot differently, just in terms of his arsenal.
Yeah, he started throwing, was it a sinker more often last season? Or the two-seam fastball?
I don't think it was either.
Well, he started using more pitches because in Arizona, yeah. Didn't they want him to just be a sinker baller?
Yeah, maybe I have it backwards then, yeah.
But he was really, really good. And yeah. 9 strikeouts yesterday. I actually think McCarthy has a lot of potential.
I mean, the problem with him is, you know, last season especially, it was his peripherals were great. Even when he was in Arizona, his peripherals were really good. He couldn't stop giving up extra base hits in particular, you know. And he gave up 25 home runs in 200 innings. 2 home runs last night in 5 innings. That's always going to be the concern, right?
Yes.
Oh, I think it was the cutter.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
The cutter. Okay.
And it was a fastball variant. So yeah, that's going to be the problem, keeping the ball in the yard. And our first glimpse of him in his new situation, it was the same story basically. So I think I'd go Miller over him.
Moving on, injuries, news, and notes. Jake Peavy on track for a Sunday start. Verlander's on the DL, might only miss one start. Kyle Lobstein will start this weekend. Any interest in streaming him in a daily league, Kyle Lobstein?
Nope.
Yeah.
James Loney's on the DL with an oblique strain. Alan Dykstra was called up. What does this mean for the Rays at first base?
I think it means a lot of Dykstra.
You
and
like
he
him?
Did in his major league debut what he's done a whole lot of in the minors, which is he walked.
Okay.
I have to admit, I was not very familiar at all with Dykstra before this call, but I took a look at his stats, and I've never seen a Fangraphs page like this where year after year, 20% or thereabouts walk rate. Now he's, you know, old for the levels that he was at, so the power that he showed, I think you could be suspicious of that, but sort of intriguing.
Jason Wirth likely to begin a rehab assignment today and could be back next week. John Jaso is probably going to the DL. Matt Garza thinks he may have been tipping his pitches Tuesday when he got roughed up by Colorado. The Pirates extended Josh Harrison 4 years, almost $28 million. Toronto outfielder Michael Saunders will begin a rehab assignment today, so his timetable has really sped up. Arizona starting pitcher Patrick Corbin could be back in early June as he returns from Tommy John surgery. And Seattle outfielder Seth Smith, no big deal. He's just got some groin tightness, could be back very soon. Interesting stuff going on with MLB lineups. People are making a lot of David Wright batting second. First of all, the Mets are going to face 2 lefties this weekend. Looks like Lucas Duda's going to sit one of those games and John Mayberry will come in. But what do you guys think about Wright at second and Granderson's leading off? Does this mean a lot to you?
It's weird. I mean, Granderson leading off is strange. But I guess if you assume that the power isn't coming back, if that's an assumption that the Mets are making, then Wright hitting second makes a lot of sense. You know, he's a guy that can get on base. He's got decent speed. But if he's not that 25 home run producer in the middle of your lineup anymore, he might make more sense moving forward in the lineup.
Does it change his value at all?
I don't think so. I mean, could lose some RBI opportunity, but I don't think it's going to be a big difference.
The lineups change a lot throughout the season.
Yeah, and that's yeah. I mean, people are making big deals out of these lineups, and you know,
didn't they have the opening day? They had a different lineup, didn't they?
The Mets.
Yeah. Or has he been? Has he batted?
No,
second?
I think he batted second.
Okay,
I'm
yeah.
pretty sure.
But you know, a lot of teams are using different lineups every day so far. So
and different players. For example, Jed Jerko sat for Yan-Hervis Solarte. Matt Duffy started in place of Joe Panik. C.J. Cron sat for Efren Navarro. Carlos Sanchez started in place of Micah Johnson. That one actually does concern me. Do you think that's a lefty-righty split there? A platoon there, Micah Johnson and Carlos Sanchez?
That's what it looks like. I mean, I have no idea what you know, what's the real thinking there. But, I had the same reaction.
Do you guys think C.J. Cron, people need to be patient with him? Is he worth patience? Is he worth stashing?
I really don't think so. I mean, in deeper leagues, I think it'd be really premature to drop him after or anytime during the first few weeks of the season. But 12 team, I think he's fringy. I don't think there's a ton of upside there.
And Willian Rosario was going to start yesterday. He did not. Justin Morneau looked like Morneau was going to be scratched with an injury. Morneau stayed in the game, stayed in the lineup, and then Rosario was a pinch hitter in the 10th inning when he homered. This one was kind of weird. Look, I don't know if it's just managers wanting to get guys into games early in the year, but I don't really know why Shane Victorino sat last night for Daniel Nava.
Yeah, no, that one was weird. I don't know how much of that we're going to see, and if we are, then I would certainly think we'd see Wisniewski Castillo pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that Victorino isn't just going to play against lefties or something like that, because he faced Hamels. He played against Hamels. He sat against Therang. We'll keep an eye on that. Odubel Herrera, he was not in the lineup. He had a sore foot. So Darren Ruff and Jeff Francoeur joined Ben Revere in the outfield for the Philadelphia Phillies, and Francoeur homered, and Jonathan Papelbon, if you saw his comments, doesn't really seem to want to be on Philadelphia, guys.
Yeah, shocking. By the way, didn't Herrera enter that game late?
He may have.
Yeah,
he came in as a defensive replacement in the final innings.
So that does not sound like a serious injury then.
Yeah.
Time for four up and two down. It was hard to do four up yesterday because the pitching was so good, and this is usually reserved for hitters. It's actually always reserved for hitters. Four up number one, Anthony Gose, 22% owned. Batted .226 last year, but went 3-for-6 with a double, a triple, and 3 RBI yesterday in another Detroit blowout of the Minnesota. They're not the Timberwolves. Who are the Twins?
Twins. Vikings.
Yeah, they're the Vikings. Well, what do you think of Gose, guys?
Batting average and power are not the things I was really expecting from him. If he keeps hitting doubles and triples, he's not going to steal many bases, but I don't really expect that to happen.
Well, what do you think about 22% owned?
I do think that's a little low because I think he's got some pretty good roto appeal.
Yeah, he's a specialist, and steals are kind of the saves of the offensive five split. So any guy that can give you upside and steals is going to be worth owning.
Now, speaking of lineups, Alcides Escobar is four up number two. I do like that he's leading off. He only led off 16 times last year. If Escobar had scored 16 more runs, he would have been the number six shortstop in points leagues. He still would have been top five in Roto. Not a great player, but I kind of feel like shortstops, you know, where runs scored could be a big category for them. His hitting first in the order could be fairly big for fantasy. Your thoughts?
I think he's weirdly a little bit undervalued. I think, you know, two out of the last 3 years, he's had a batting average of .285 or better. He steals bases efficiently. He doesn't get on base much, but, you know, I think at such a weak position, the fact that he's batting first gives him that little boost that I think can make him a little better.
Brad Miller, 38% owned, went 2-for-4 with a homer. Who would you rather own, Brad Miller or Alcides Escobar?
That's a format split again, because I would want Escobar for the steals in Roto, but I would definitely want Miller in a points league.
Miller or J.J. Hardy, assuming health?
Miller.
Miller.
Miller or Johnny Peralta?
I'd say Miller. More upside.
Yeah, Peralta's safer, I guess.
Yeah.
Carlos Gonzalez, four up number four, 385 with a homer, four RBI, and three doubles so far. When do you sell high on Carlos Gonzalez before his DL stint?
I mean, that's the thing, is that you can't actually predict when he's going to get hurt. So it's if you sell high and he ends up staying healthy for the next month, you're going to look pretty bad.
Okay, I'm going to predict it. I want
May
you guys,
15th.
No, Chris said you can't predict it.
Oh, you're going to say, I was actually going to go like right around there. Fine, I'll price is right it. Closest without going over, so I'll say May 16th.
Yeah, it just, the problem is there's no question that he can be an elite fantasy option when he's healthy. It's just, you know he's going to miss 35 plus games at minimum.
Well, it is good to see him hitting well.
Yeah.
So not looking, like if you owned him, would you be looking to sell him right now?
It's not like the people in your league don't know about his injury history.
Well, some
like, they're going to have the same issues as you are. I like Gonzalez. I was targeting him a lot this season in drafts. It's just, I don't know if he's someone you can buy high on. Like, you just have to value him the same way no matter what.
Okay, two down. Two down number one is Evan Gattis. He went 0-for-4 with three strikeouts against Cleveland. And two down number two is Texas outfielder Ryan Rua, who is 23% owned. He is 1-for-11 with seven strikeouts. Very bad start for Rua. Yeah.
And Gattis, it's not a good result, but I don't worry about him after, a few games. But for Rua, I mean, he needs to turn it around pretty quickly because he was neck and neck with Jake Smolinski for the starting role anyway in spring training. So, a semi-extended slump for him could mean he loses the job, I would think.
How about some rotation right now? We'll look at five starters from yesterday. R.A. Dickey had a good start. Jose Quintana, Andrew Cashner, Danny Duffy, and Hisashi Iwakuma had bad starts. Dickey is 86% owned. Not a guy I ever own, fellas. How do you approach R.A. Dickey?
Yeah, and I don't own him either, and I sort of consciously skipped around him in drafts,
right,
avoiding him. And it's not that I don't think he has value. It's just it was the safe versus upside thing in the mid to late rounds that, he was not the safe guy I was targeting if I was targeting one.
I got him late in an AL-only league, I think. I think that's the only one I had him in.
Yeah, so the fact that he's 86% owned surprises me. I guess we're in the minority.
Well, no, I think he's someone that you absolutely think is worth owning, right?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Just you don't
it was never
want
me.
It's just somebody has to own him. You just don't want it to be you.
I would never own him. If he were out there in free agency, unless I was in like a 14 team league or deeper, I would never own him because he's just so inconsistent, and you never know when he's going to have a good start, when he's going to have a bad start. I don't see much upside there either. So I'm going to look at some starting pitchers who are being added right now, and despite R.A. Dickey's good start, would you rather have R.A. Dickey or Zach McAllister?
Yeah, I'd rather have McAllister.
Yeah.
R.A. Dickey or Archie Bradley?
I'll go Dickey.
I will too.
Oh, see, I would.
There's enough risk in Bradley, I think, that the chances of him reaching that upside are pretty slim.
I guess if I had to start one of them, I'd go Dickey, but if I just were stashing, I mean, it's a no-brainer.
We were talking about that a little bit in the office yesterday, and that's kind of my philosophy. It depends on what your team needs.
Yeah. I mean, if you're just stashing someone, because you could have gotten Dickey so late that you're not relying on him as your starter. He's a bench player for you. That's why I would take a gamble on Bradley. Agree or disagree?
I do disagree. I actually think there's way more risk with Bradley, at least for this season, than there is upside potential.
Oh, there is more risk, but if he's bad, I'll drop him. I'll pick someone else up that I like better than Davis.
I guess it's just my way of saying it. I don't really trust Bradley.
Okay.
If it's that bench spot, that's the way I look at it. If there's a chance that I'll start either one of them in a given week, I would go with Dickey. But if it's a clear, like if it's your last bench spot and it's just somewhere where you're sticking whoever's hot and hoping that they hit, I think Bradley's got more upside.
Yeah, and I mean, there are upside guys. I would definitely, a lot of them, I would prefer to Dickey. But I think I just really don't trust Bradley. With the good spring that he had, he still wasn't striking guys out.
Yeah.
And look, I hate leaning on spring stats anyway. So, I mean, I'm more comfortable just looking at the minor league track record, which hasn't been that great.
Looking at ownership, he is more owned than McAllister. He's more owned than Jesse Hahn. He's more owned than Kendall Graveman. So I think Yeah, there are other guys you'd rather have. Yeah, I think among the upside plays, Bradley's kind of far down the list.
Yeah, and you know, just to kind of round out the point, that while there are players that I would prefer to have on the bench besides Dickey's not a completely useless use of that bench spot, because
especially, I think in a head-to-head league especially.
That's exactly what I was going to say. In head-to-head leagues for two start weeks, that's somebody I would like to have access to stream. And given that high ownership rate, I don't know that you can rely on him to be a pitch-and-ditch guy where you're going to be able to pitch him again after you ditch him.
And he's a big name.
Yeah.
Oh, good stuff. Any concerns about Jose Quintana, Andrew Cashner, or Danny Duffy?
Not with any of them.
No.
Maybe the most with Duffy, just because with the benefits that you get from him in terms of a low BABIP and improved control that he showed last year, he is probably going to cough up some home runs.
Duffy or Dickey?
Duffy or Dickey?
Yeah.
Duffy.
Well, I got to tell you, I think that the Royals' pitching is just awful. The Royals, as a team, are terrible. They have one of the worst managers in baseball. And oh, Heath Cummings is here.
You know, your pitching doesn't have to be good when you score 8.5 runs a game.
That's true. Hey, can we up his volume a little bit?
Oh, there you go.
We'll do the on-air mic check.
I thought you were just raising the roof there.
Yeah, Heath, say that again.
The pitching doesn't have to be good when you score 8.5 runs a game.
It doesn't. You're absolutely right. So we're ready for some daily fantasy advice. And a reminder to everybody that CBS Sports hosts one-day fantasy baseball leagues on FanDuel. For every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play, a bonus of up to $200 right now. Go to FanDuel.com and use the offer code CBS. FanDuel.com, FanDuel.com, and the offer code is CBS. Okay, Heath, I'm relying on you today.
It's a little bit of a mess today is what it is, Adam, because we've got this, what they call a split slate.
Right.
You've got 6 games in the afternoon if you want to play the afternoon. You've got 3 games in the evening if you want to play the evening. You can't really play them all together if you want to play a big contest.
I would like to say that drinks are on me. Because the last 2 days, I have quadrupled my money and tripled my money, and that has netted me, when you count my bets, $5.
Woo!
So, yeah.
You are doing a good job of managing your bankroll.
You know, Heath has hit the point that it's all about the process over the result.
Yeah.
I'm giving up. I'm 3 days in. I'm giving up on FanDuel baseball.
No.
I'm so bad.
The mantra around the office, and I've heard it said by, I think, almost everybody now, is trust the process.
Well, I think, Chris, that the reason I'm only, you know, going a dollar is because there's just so many unknowns this early in the season.
Yeah.
And today is a great example. I don't know if I want to bet against Asher Wojciechowski. Yesterday, I bet against Heston, and it didn't work out very well now, did it? So,
okay, but here's the thing. What are your other options if you don't bet against Wojciechowski?
Sabathia. If you play the late game, Sabathia, I think, is a good guy to bet against.
Right, but you can't talk about Wojciechowski and Sabathia because they are not in the same contests.
So
we're looking at day games, and you can forget about Pittsburgh-Cincinnati because
you could bet against Kyle Gibson.
Forecast looks awful there.
You could bet against Kyle Gibson, but that one might get rained out too.
You can bet against Kyle Gibson, but I'm getting, as it gets closer to game time, I'm getting a little bit more encouraged by the weather in Detroit. I think they're at least going to start that game.
Well,
I'm not a weatherman.
The chance of rain at first pitch looks like it's down to 5%, I think is what it says.
I will say on the early slate, the top 3 projected run totals are all American League Central offenses.
Well, I was going to say bet against Nick Martinez. I like the A's today. I really like Kendall Graveman. He's my favorite pitcher. What about you?
Well, I'm Mr. Pay Up for Pitcher, and then I see Kendall Graveman at $5,000.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to play him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to play Strasburg some too, and I'm going to play Harvey in at least one lineup. The Strasburg-Harvey thing, it's not cool when the 2 best pitchers of the day are playing against each other. But what you can do is put together your best Steven Strasburg lineup. He's going to be good. It's just whether he's going to get those 4 extra for a win.
All right.
And then to play that in a $1 tournament, and then put that same lineup together swap Strasburg out for Harvey because he's going to be good. It's just whether he gets that four-point bonus for a win. And you've got those two lineups that are identical, except one has Harvey, one has Strasburg.
That's a very good idea. Which teams would you want to stack for hitters?
I'm staying entirely in the American League Central. I like the Indians, the left-handers especially. If the Tigers play, they're my favorite stack. They own Kyle Gibson, and who doesn't? And, well, I guess fantasy owners don't. But then my third one is the Royals. John Danks has been, and Al, I've asked everyone, Adam, so I'll ask you too.
Okay.
John Danks has completely destroyed the Royals everywhere, but especially at Kauffman Stadium over his career. In 10 starts, he's got an ERA below 2 at Kauffman Stadium. Does that matter to you, Adam?
Absolutely.
It does not matter to Al. It does not matter to Scott at all.
Yeah, it does. I think that's sometimes those things just exist.
But why?
For example,
why would John Danks do?
I don't know.
So Royals.
Mark Burley is so bad against the Yankees that the Blue Jays intentionally did not have him pitch, from what I understand, in this series. Did I say John Danks or Mark Burley?
You said Burley.
Okay, that because his ERA lifetime against the Yankees is like around 5 or 6. It's just a fact. He could have a great year like he had last year and still struggle against the Yankees. So I'll buy it, and I don't think the Royals are so good as hitters that I need them in my lineup.
All right, I'm going to reach here.
Okay.
He's not very good. He doesn't strike guys out, but Ned Yost has a tendency to give outs away. Maybe that slight edge, maybe that's it's just he's teetering on the edge of being okay, and like those three extra sacrifice bunts push him over. That's my theory.
Well, okay. I think another thing is 75% of John Danks' starts against the Royals happened in 2012 or before.
Okay.
In 2009, 10, 11, 12, there were some really, really bad. I'm not saying the Royals' offense now is a juggernaut, but there were some really bad offenses.
Well, does this impact the Royals or Danks more? Like, would you gamble on Danks?
Oh, I'm not playing Danks, no. Okay. No. I was talking solely for the purposes of whether you'd play Royals.
Well, do you have any specific hitter recommendations?
Specific? Oh, so you'd like specifics. You're playing Miggy.
Okay.
If they play, and I think they're going to start, I'm going to play V-Mart. I'm going to stack the Tigers. I like Alcides Escobar. He's still only 3,000. He's leading off. He's going to get 4 to 5 at bats. If you get worried about Miggy playing, if it looks like that game's going to get rained out, there's also supposed to be a 20-mile-an-hour wind blowing out at Kauffman Stadium today. So not that Jose Abreu needs that, but he could hit a pop-up that goes out.
Interesting. That's not good for John Danks.
Hey, speaking of pop-ups, you remember yesterday we were talking about Colby Lewis and how I had this realization one day too late that he's really perfectly fit to pitch at O.co.
Yes.
I think the same might be true of Nick Martinez. He's another guy who gets his fair share of pop-ups.
So we do not want the Athletics.
I don't. And, what do you think of Kennedy? That's the guy I'm leaning towards.
I like Kennedy if you're going to play the 3-game slate tonight. And I wrote about this a little bit in my article today. I don't like playing 3-game baseball slates. There's not enough players.
Well, I do think, though, in this particular day that those 3 games seem easier to predict than the early ones. You got David Buchanan facing Boston. You've got Sabathia facing the Blue Jays. And Sabathia, even when he's great, Sabathia was pretty bad in April. So I think he could get lit up. I hope not. And then you've got the Giants-Padres, which should be a good game. Buster Posey, by the way, 15 for 36 against Ian Kennedy in his career. Heath, I'll let you go in a couple of minutes if you want to finish up.
Okay, I agree with that, Adam, but the problem is with only 3 games, all those players you said that seem like obvious plays, everybody's going to have them.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you just got to get them all right?
You've got to get them all right, and then you've got to get one guy right that most people don't have.
Oswaldo Arcia, that's my pick. 880 OPS against right-handed pitchers last season.
Boom.
Cool. Good stuff. All right, Heath, thank you very much, and You'll have your blog entry and video on the website to give people specifics about the lineup they should be trotting out today or tonight.
I'm going. I've sent that to the copier, so it's going on the press right now.
Oh, very nice. The copier or the printer?
The press.
What?
For the printing press.
The printing press.
Azer's too young to know what a newspaper is.
Those things you read online?
I copier the first time because I couldn't think of printing press, but yeah, printing press.
Gotcha. All right, Heath Cummings. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Anything to say, guys, about Scott Kazmir, Jake Arrieta, Lance Lynn, or Carlos Carrasco, who dominated last night?
Yeah, well, I think this was off air, but Scott White yesterday was talking about how he really liked Kazmir and pointed out that there were stretches last season, mostly in the middle of the year, where he was the strikeout guy he was two seasons ago. And I really overlooked that. And, yeah, I don't know if this is an artifact of the Rangers being the opponent or not, but it bears watching.
And in deep leagues, I'm just going to say some names. You tell me if they interest you. Other than Heston and Harang, Scott Feldman, Eddie Butler, Oakland first baseman Mark Canna, Oakland second baseman Tyler Ladendorf, Detroit shortstop Jose Iglesias, and Yonder Alonso.
I think Alonso's got a little bit of upside this season.
So you're not over Yonder?
Boo.
Over Macho Grande, Al?
I'll never get over Macho Grande.
Okay. And, Chris, do you get that joke?
What's that?
Do you get that over Macho Grande reference?
No.
You're weak, man. Airplane 2. All right, I'm sorry. I cut you off.
Airplane 1, fine. Airplane 2, no.
Airplane 2 has plenty of good moments. Worth seeing.
Eh.
Trust me.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, you should. Did you want to continue Yonder Alonso, or are you ready for emails?
No, that's it.
In your emails, in your inbox, here's Devin from New York. He says, hello, Tywin, Jaime, and Tyrion.
Game of Thrones.
Thank you. I play in a 12-team head-to-head points league. I ended up with several risk-reward types. So please rank the following players in likelihood of bouncing back to previous performances. Prince Fielder, Chris Davis, Joey Votto, Curtis Granderson. Prince Fielder, Chris Davis, Joey Votto, Curtis Granderson.
Joey Votto, Chris Davis, Prince Fielder, Curtis Granderson.
I think I'm the same way. I might swap Granderson and Fielder. That's not saying Granderson's better, just has a better chance of getting to his previous levels of performance.
That was the toughest one for me, too, so yeah.
Nick in Indianapolis. Good morning, amigo, amigo, and amigo. Of the recent Tommy John recipients, it seems to me there are a few worth stashing for a possible second-half boost if you have the DL spot. So I'm asking in context of a keeper league, who would you want? How would you rank these guys? Sorry. Fernandez, he'll be number one, so after him. Medlin, Beachy, Griffin, Parker, Corbin, Matt Moore, Ivan Nova. Medlin, Beachy, Griffin, Parker, Corbin, Moore, Nova. Give me your top three, guys.
I'll say Medlin, Moore, Corbin.
That sounds about right. I might go more ahead. He should be back pretty early on, right? May or June?
I'm thinking, yeah, probably June.
Okay. I'll put CBS Sports own Matt Moore at number one.
Moshe from Montreal. In my head-to-head categories league, we are allotted three pickups per week. In past years, I've played head-to-head points, but this is my first year playing categories. I used to make a living off picking up risky two-star pitchers, but in a categories league, is it worth it to take an almost certain loss in ERA and WHIP to try and get a bump up in strikeouts and wins? And should I save my ads for the end of the week to see what categories I need, or take the extra strikeouts and possibly a win by taking a two-star pitcher?
I don't think waiting until the end of the week makes much sense, because you're limiting the amount of opportunities you have to make that impact anyway.
Just think you have to be careful with the two-star pitchers.
Yeah.
You can't, just don't take bad ones. You might not get the win, and you might not get enough strikeouts to make it matter, and if you lose ERA and WHIP because of it, it just seems too risky. In other words, I don't know that this would really change my strategy from what I do in a head-to-head points league.
I think you're more willing to take the risky two-star pitchers in a head-to-head points league.
You are, because you're not going to necessarily, it'd be hard to lose points.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I usually don't.
It makes you more conservative.
But I usually don't take, like, if there's a starting pitcher that I think is going to hurt me in a two-start week in a categories league, I'm still not interested in him in a points league. I'd rather go with a better one-start guy. Al, I know you feel me on that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, you're my boy. All right, last one is from Brandon from Minnesota. He says, hello, Tyrion, Jamie, and Xerxy. Or Cersei.
Cersei.
Yeah, I never remember how to pronounce her. I call her Xerox. It's another Game of Thrones reference. I have a question about strategy. Oh, Game of Thrones is Sunday, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah, I don't watch it, but yes, I know it is Sunday.
Well, I do. I'm not even going to bring Al into this discussion.
You know I'm going to be working on my hieroglyphs this weekend.
I have a question about... Yeah, use your printing press for that, by the way. I have a question about the daily head-to-head leagues and strategy. There are a few teams in my league that are so crazy about pitchers, they add and drop as many pitchers as they can just so they can get a guy that can pitch every day on their roster. The guys they're picking up are about 5% owned in fantasy leagues. Is this a crazy strategy, or is this madness actually a thing that I should consider?
I hate daily head-to-head leagues, by the way. I hate that whole process. Just putting that out there. I hate anything that rewards being anally retentive over being good.
Well, that's why you need an innings limit.
Yeah.
So, but if you don't have an innings limit, yeah, I know that the strategy right now is probably working, because if you picked up Kyle Kendrick and Eddie Butler and Aaron Harang, it's been working for you. But in general,
process over results.
What would you guys do in that situation? Is it worth picking up those low end guys in a league like this?
No way. Yeah, you might have gotten away with it with those pitchers so far this week, but in the long run, that's going to burn you.
I'm learning a lot about this daily format. You know what's as important as a maximum innings limit per week?
Minimum?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing with pitching, is that since two of the stats are rate stats and two of the stats are counting stats, you do have to balance that a little more than with hitters, where you can just – there's really no downside to stacking your lineup with as many guys as you can.
That is true. It's just a matter of who are you dropping, which is why bench size is so important in these daily leagues. But they do present fun little dilemmas that you don't get in the weekly leagues. Whether you think they're fun or not is, I guess, subjective, but little dilemmas. Okay, Alan, Chris, the Tuesday-Thursday combo. Thanks, dudes.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Adam.
And for Heath Cummings, I'm Adam Azer, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.